I had only built one product before that, and my understanding of fundamental technologies, I didn't finish computer science. So there's a lot of technical debt, even to this day, that has to be overcome. Like V1 was jQuery, Ajax, and PHP, and just kind of takes a couple seconds to load something. You add it into the DOM manually, and it sends an Ajax request, and it updates the database, and then comes back. So again, it wasn't about making it perfect. It was about making something that worked. My name is Adrian, and I am the CEO and founder of Groundhog.
This is Code Story, the podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries who share in the critical moments of what it takes to change an industry and build and lead a team that has your back. I'm your host, Noah Labhart, and today how Adrian Toby built the best CRM and MarTech tool for SMBs and agencies using WordPress. All this and more on Code Story. Adrian Toby lives in Canada. He got started in his tech career right out of high school, working for his father's digital marketing agency. In high school, he was interested in computer science and developed video games and useful UI for his school. Prior to digital marketing, his father was a jazz musician, and Adrian followed in those footsteps to play the trumpet. For university, he had two options. He could go to school for computer science or for music, and he ended up choosing the latter. During school, he was working full-time for his dad's agency, building websites, email campaigns, and such. While he was doing this, he built his first product, called Formlift, which is a WordPress form builder for Infusionsoft. Around 3 years into school, he failed his first university course, a discrete computer science course around computer runtimes, Big O notation, etc. He had invested a ton of money into his degree already, but he started doing the math and estimated he wouldn't complete school until 2025, because he was part-time. With that in mind, he dropped out of university and thought, what next? He didn't want to do agency work forever. He took a look at how expensive, convoluted, and clunky marketing technology tools can be, and he vowed to create the ultimate suite of tools and to do it in WordPress. This is the creation story of Groundhog.
Groundhog is a CRM and marketing automation platform specifically for businesses that use WordPress. So the main differentiator between something like maybe ActiveCampaign or Infusionsoft or HubSpot, kind of like the big three that I see, or maybe even ConvertKit and Drip and whatnot, is that all of those are software as a service, right? So you're paying monthly fees, you're renting their space, you're using that platform. If you stop paying that bill, what happens to your data? Goes up in smoke. Right, your account access is locked until you pay the bill. You can't export any of the information. You can't bring it. You can't port it over anyone. The only thing that you could feasibly export is like your contact list. But any of like the emails, the automations, all that stuff, it's like it's gone. If we built a CRM and marketing automation platform, which didn't really exist yet for WordPress, there's a few options now. We were kind of like the first to enter this space and really define it. We can build something that's natively hosted on WordPress that natively integrates with all of the major top shelf WordPress plugin providers and developer shops. And we can also make it so that all of your data is self-hosted. You have full control and makes you epically compliant with GDPR and HIPAA and all that stuff, because you get to choose where that data is actually put, because you get to choose where your website is hosted, with which server, hosting service and which company. And that was really, is like, that's kind of our eureka moments. Like, if we could make that happen, then we could solve so many problems that exist, or so many considerations for agencies and small businesses who are heavily investing in this technology to help them launch, grow, and scale their business. Then we might have like a winner. We might have a product that people might be interested in. So I started kind of identifying the unique value props and kind of going a little bit deeper into it. Like, as an agency, it was incredibly difficult to duplicate content for like businesses. So let's say I have a general contractor come in and I build up his whole system and like his quotes and his quote system, his intake form, his follow-up email reminders, his review requests, right? And I went through all of this work and I built it for this client, right? And I get another general contractor and he's basically just acting for the same stuff. It was incredibly difficult for us to go into a tool like Infusionsoft or ActiveCampaign or HubSpot and basically just do like export from one account and import into another account. And if it was possible, it was like 10 steps and you had to be a partner and you had to like upload it to like their central directory and it had to be approved by someone and it could take like weeks, days to weeks in order to actually go through that process, which is just ridiculous in my own view of it. And we're like, let's just make it as easy as humanly possible. They can click an export button of all of their content and they can go to any other WordPress website that has our plugin installed and they can download it, no hassle. It literally just exports to a JSON file. And it's like stuff like that where there's just these really simple efficiencies for developers and agencies and freelancers who are often doing the work, you know, to make their experience better and to allow them to do more business faster, right? And we started drilling into stuff like that. And then eventually, let's get to actually developing product.
So tell me about the MVP, right? That first product you built, how long it took you to build, and, you know, what sort of tools you used to bring it to life.
So for the MVP, it worked. It was, but you know, there wasn't a whole lot to compare it to in terms of functionality because it's the only kind of a product that existed as a WordPress plugin. It was, there was nothing else to compare it to. The only thing that could be compared to was SaaS, right? Which a lot of people may have just not even looked at because they're just kind of looking for that WordPress plugin to fill that role. So it was very much a just get it done focus for the MVP. If it works, that's it. And we're not going to focus on like the most beautiful UI. We're not going to focus on, you know, the fringe feature requests or like specific things. It's like content has to be portable. It has to be all on WordPress. You have to be able to send an email and you have to be able to like schedule events after like someone buys a product, stuff like that. It's like, as long as we can fulfill the base requirements to enable like your average business to be able to use this and get value out of it, then that's where we're going to stop. At least as far as the MVP is concerned. As I mentioned, that process took 2 months, and at the end of 2 months, we had marketing automation. So being able to lay out a funnel with like delay timer, so wait 3 days, send an email. Wait 3 days, send an email until someone like buys a product. And after that, wait about a couple days, send a review request. So we had that component. We had a block-based email editor. So being able to drag in your paragraph and being able to drag in your image and your button, change the text, change the links. And we had the CRM component. So being able to like create custom fields, see first name, last name, email address, scrape the profile picture, from Gravatar, and that's where MVP was. And after that, we launched it, we released it 1.0. We didn't do beta tests, we didn't do anything. We just put it out there to see if anybody would be interested, right? Because there's no point in like investing like tons of money and time and see if, you know, if after 2 months nobody wants it. We got a little bit of traction. It was a slow start. It was like 100 people. Like 0 to 100 people for at least like the first few months.
With any MVP, you've got to make certain decisions and trade-offs about what you're going to cut or what you're going to accept as far as technical debt, right? And you alluded to a little bit, a few of those when you were talking, but I want to dive into it and answer it specifically. You know, what sort of decisions and trade-offs did you have to make in that short term and how you coped with those decisions?
I had only built one product before that, and my understanding of fundamental technologies, I didn't finish computer science. Right, I dropped out in year 2.5, basically, because I was doing it part-time. So I was there for 3 years, but I was only really in year 2.5. And then I cut my losses. And so There's a lot of technical debt, even to this day, that has to be overcome. We've removed a lot of it over what will be soon our third major upgrade in as many years. For example, you know, everything now is like React or Vue.js or like these awesome JavaScript libraries for creating beautiful UIs, right? There's a lot of that. And V1 was jQuery, Ajax, and PHP, and just kind of like, you know, takes a couple seconds to load something. You add it into the DOM manually, and it sends an Ajax request, and it updates the database, and then comes back. So we just, but you know, again, it wasn't about making it perfect. It was about making something that worked, and seeing if it was a viable, you know, because the only business that we were using it for was our own, and our list only had 100 people on it. We wanted to make sure, if we were going to invest time in this, that it would be viable for someone with like a list of 500,000 contacts on it, which it is, by the way. And so that would be the major trade-off, but not necessarily a trade-off, more just like a lack of my own personal knowledge. I didn't invest time in learning libraries or learning new stuff. I'm just like, this is what I know, and this is what I'm going to use in order to get this out the door. Right? And again, I'm doing it myself. I didn't have any other developers at that point in time. And I mean, fortunately, there's help now. But it was just relying on what I knew. I didn't even know that React existed or like Vue.js was an option. Like I wasn't even consciously aware of these great tools that exist now to improve the development process, or like Webpack or whatever. And Gutenberg for WordPress, which is their new WordPress editor, which is why kind of like the entire WordPress ecosystem is moving towards using React as a lot of the UI components, didn't even exist yet. So yeah, a lot of, and the one major trade-off, and again, this comes to my own personal skills and ability at that point in time, was a lot of our competitors, when you build marketing automation, you're in ActiveCampaign or you're in Infusionsoft, you have like this flowchart. Right, you can drag in nodes, and then there's like arrows and conditions and stuff like that. And I had no idea, like no idea where to even begin with that. So the way that we approached it, and also I thought this was a good way to approach it, because a lot of the time we saw that the whole flowchart thing tripped a lot of newbies up. It trips businesses up, because they end up building these flowcharts with no exits, accidentally, not on purpose. And you know, based on my own skill level, it wasn't even possible to build something that would allow them to do that. So we just built out this linear system, so you could it was basically halfway in between just setting up a simple autoresponder, but also having sort of like the if then until logic of it. So it's kind of like it's somewhere in the middle, and because that's the way that we originally designed it, that's where we are today still.
Well, dialing back to where you were talking about, so you got your MVP done, you got it released, you're getting some traction, you're getting some feedback. How did you go about progressing the product from there and maturing it? And how did you build your roadmap and figure out, okay, this is the next most important thing to build?
Our first customer was my dad and his agency and their clients. I was our first customer. Like, you know, leverage the opportunities that you have. So he ended up switching like pretty much all of his clients from Infusionsoft to Groundhog, which they were all very grateful, because an entire year license of what we charge is equivalent to 1 month of their product. So they were all very grateful, and you know, we got a lot of feedback through that. In terms of like, this is broken, this isn't working, this isn't right, or we need this feature in order to actually be able to conduct business. So a lot of early development in that first year was like from more or less 100 people in this circle, and us basically, or me, and we did hire a developer who was with us for a full 2 years after, in month two. So I mentioned I did that friends and family thing. That afforded us a developer who, it was his first job ever, so he wasn't like $100,000 a year or anything. And we kind of just banged stuff out as quickly as we could. Basically, just whatever people needed. In that first little while, we were a feature factory. Just trying to get as much out as humanly possible, increase the value prop, and provide more options for small businesses. Moving into sort of the later half of the first year, is when not even really, it's like direction was set probably in year two, like clear defined direction for what needs to happen with the product and where it needs to go. Because the beginning of year two is when we did our first major version upgrade from one to two, where we basically just rewrote the whole bloody thing. And added a whole bunch of like reporting features. That's one of the major drawbacks of a lot of these platforms, is that the reporting is always subpar. Like there's always the information is there, the data is there. It's just so incredibly difficult to view it as a business owner in a format that enables you to make good business decisions. For example, take ActiveCampaign or Infusionsoft. With their flowchart editors, you can create these epic campaigns and epic automations. People go in, people come out. But trying to find out how many people went in and how many people came out and what that meant for revenue and how to, and correlate revenue to specific emails with open rates and whatnot, is just mind-bogglingly difficult. You have to go into like three different screens, and then you basically have to have a spreadsheet up at the same time, plug in the numbers, and do all the math yourself. And it's like, I don't got time for that. So in 2.0, we released this whole dashboard, which basically took the most relevant metrics from the funnels, from the emails, from everything. And we give conversion rates, we give revenue per email, we give orders per email, we give add to carts per email, we give donations per email, per funnel as well. So we built this entire tracking system to basically correlate between all of the relevant top shelf WordPress plugins like WooCommerce, you need to get to PPV, and basically anything that collects money, and be able to tie that directly to which email did a person open, which immediately led to this purchase, so we can give a much clearer view of the customer journey, so that a user, an end user, someone who's using Groundhog and looking at the reports, can go in and see, all right, well, there's three emails in this funnel. This one is getting a 50% open rate and 30% click-through, but this one is getting a 60% open rate, but zero click-through. What's up with that, right? And there's absolutely zero orders for this email while there's three for the other one. It's like, what's up with that? And them being able to say, hey, that's probably a hole, or there's probably something wrong with that email. Let's go and change it.
Well, let's switch to teams. You mentioned hiring a developer, right? How did you go about building your team? And what do you look for in those people to indicate they're the winning horses to join you?
Honestly, if I were to go back and do it over again, I'd probably do it differently. I did it in like such a dramatic fashion. I was very dramatic. It was very dramatic the way that I did it. Too dramatic for the size of business that I was, right? It was just me at the time, and I'm like, all right, well, I need help. Let's go find help. So we hired locally. We did it locally. We had an office at that point in time. We're remote now. And we put out a job listing on Indeed, and we had like a group of people come into the office. We had like, I think maybe 7 or 8 people come in, to all developers. And I posed them a question. I'm like, how would you solve this problem? You have 30 minutes. And then they wrote out their solution on a piece of paper, and I looked, and whoever had the best solution got hired. And honestly, that was, I mean, the person who I hired was great, and he was with us for 2 years, and he did a really good job. But that was so dramatic. That's like some Google level stuff. And I'm like, I wouldn't do that again now. It's embarrassing, really. And honestly, it was just us for a long time. Well into the end of year two. It was so throughout year one and well into the end of year two, it was just us. We were both doing development, and I would do customer support, and he would do customer support, and really that's all we needed. We didn't have like tons of clients. We had maybe like around 1,000, and the software was good. We weren't getting like tons of support requests, and it was manageable. And the features we were still being a feature factory, still pumping out new stuff. And at the end of year two is when we started to pick up steam. Black Friday happened. I had made a bunch of friends at this point, so I'm not sure if we're going to talk about product marketing at all and getting customers for your product, because I have a few words to say on that. But I'll just say for now, by the end of year two, I had made a lot of friends and of powerful and large communities, and I was totally leeching off of their lists and building our own, where we had to eventually like, all right, well, we need more help. Like, we need people like for specifically support, because I'm, you know, the CEO, I can't be doing this for the rest of my life. I got to build product and lead and do other things and be on podcasts and whatnot. So we had started, or I had started, a certified partner program, which is a very common thing for most CRM marketing automation providers to have. And we have around 40 or odd sort of certified partners at this point in time. And we basically put out a call to people in our Facebook group. We have a Facebook group that has 1,500 people in it. And we're like, hey, listen, we need to hire someone for customer support. Is there anybody who uses our product that needs a gig? a friend of mine, Chris Badgett, who's the CEO over at Lifter LMS, which is like the second largest LMS plugin for WordPress, he said, you know, the first place that I always go to hire is in our own community. And I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. You know, the people who already use your product know it best. So I went to our list, and lo and behold, we actually brought on a certified partner to be one of our customer success people. Her name is Jessie. She's great. And then after that, basically hired in a much more standard format. Put out a job listing, put it out to the community as well. We hired contractors, we brought on people salaried, we brought on developers, let go developers. It's been, the team has grown, the team has shrunk based on demand and based on needs. One of my most recent HR experiences was in year three, well, at the end of year two. It was time for, as I mentioned, you know, another major version upgrade to get rid of, again, a whole bunch of technical debt. And I had this grand vision of Groundhog 3.0, which would be fully React. We'd eliminate the tech debt. It would be beautiful. It would have the flowchart thing. It would have this like this wonderful block-based email editor. That was a major improvement beyond what we had, and it would be done in 3 months. That was my grand vision at sort of the end of year two. So we had, you know, year two was profitable, actually. So year one, we lost money, as most tech businesses probably do. But year two, we made up for it and then some. So we had cash in the bank. I'm like, well, let's go hire some people to make this happen. So that's what I did. Pricey people. And they did good work, but it wasn't fast by any stretch of the imagination. So after three months, not even anywhere close to anything releasable. And then another 5 months goes by, same story. You know, it's further, but it's not there. And I'm paying US salaries now for React developers. Which I'm not sure if anyone on this call is familiar with the going rate for React developer, but you know, it's not inexpensive. And I'm a small business at the end of the day, and we work with small businesses. We're not this has been a bootstrapped venture from day one, minus the friends and family loan, right? But you know, there's no venture capital coming in to fund this project at a loss for whatever. So, you know, at a certain point, it's like, well, I'm looking at where 3.0 is in terms of production. And I'm like, you know what? If I eliminated React and I just did it the way that I know how to, I could probably have this whipped up in a week. Right, just using good old fashioned, you know, template literals and a little bit of jQuery and a little bit of Ingenuity and handling event listeners manually, I could probably have this done to some relatively acceptable fashion by the end of this week. And so at nights, going back to my kind of all-nighter schedule, I whipped something up in a week. Now it's not a finished product by any stretch of the imagination, but it was already further than the previous 8 months of React development with not cheap developers. And at that point, it's like, all right, it does not. And then, you know, I'm looking at how far there's probably still to go and investment and operating the company at a loss, essentially, to cover the extensive development costs. And I'm like, this can't go on, right? It's not sustainable. So we ended up, that was a tough decision. It's like we invested well over $100,000 at this point into this project with this React team. And it was tough, but you know, that's the call. You like, if it's not going to get done, then, but you can do it a different way and you can do it for cheaper to reach 95% of the same results. What's the call? Right? What choice do you really have? So we ended up laying off that team and moving directly to just kind of good old fashioned get her done mode. And we are basically like imminently away now within 3 months, which was the original goal to get something out the door. And we actually just shipped a not a major release, but a minor release with some of the stuff that we've been working on, and the reception has been ecstatic. It was pain. It's painful. It was, and it's also like, you know, the sunk cost fallacy, right? I had invested so much. You know, at month three, I'd already invested like basically 30K, because we also hired a contractor to kind of like get the boat started, and he was like 15,000 for the month. And I'm like, okay, you know, we have it. Sure, why not? And then it kind of added up.
Well, let's flip to scalability then. So how are you approaching scalability when you're building your product? And are you fighting this as you grow and get traction?
Well, in terms of the product, scalability was a concern from day one. So making sure that it worked was always top of priority, not making sure that it was beautiful. Kind of like the beautiful aspect is what we're kind of working on now, making it beautiful. It's already quite robust. We have customers with lists of well over 500,000 people where they send 500,000 emails per day without much of an issue, without any issue, really. And that was always priority number one for me, because WordPress like has a rep for, you know, if you have like big plugins on it, it's going to slow down, or, you know, it's unreliable. And the, you know, SaaS does a good job of marketing that to their customers, right? And they have a marketing engine designed to ensure that the stigma sticks. Right. It exists. It's a process that happens. And, you know, you don't hate the players, hate the game. Right. So there's a stigma to overcome for us. So reliability was always kind of like evangelizing WordPress as a viable option for small businesses to not only host their content, but their e-commerce and their digital marketing and CRM as well. right? So scalability was kind of just like a done deal in terms of day one, doing our stress testing, doing our load testing, doing our case studies, getting a big client, and then working with them on Zoom calls to figure out where stuff could be improved. And in year one, we did a whole ton of scalability improvements and efficiency improvements to like our event queue model and our AWS SES integration for like multi-threading and multi-process curl requests and like the whole thing. And we got it to a point where like even at 500,000, sending an email in like a couple hours is like non-issue. In terms of team, right? I've always wanted a big team. But there's not enough work for one, really. At least I haven't reached a point where I feel like there's enough work for a big team. Like, Jessie's really good at what she does. We have certified partners. We have a Facebook group that takes care of a lot of the technical support. We have incredible videos, incredible education. We focused a lot on like our academy and on our courses. That was also a big pillar that we wanted to focus on, was making sure that there was education surrounding the product to make sure that new people could understand what to do and how it worked. Investing in templates, investing in all of these things to ensure that there was as minimal work to do on behalf of us so that we could focus on building great product. And to an extent, that's still true. I hired a big team. That's what for 3.0 is. And it didn't work. And here I am being a small team again, getting more work done, getting it done faster. Right. And, we're certainly enough to handle the amount of people that we work with and be profitable, which is important, right? We're a bootstrapped organization. We can only spend what we make, which is around 25K USD per month, which is where our current MRR is. And yeah, so in terms of scalability, you know, if it gets to like a million MRR, then that's a little bit different story. I think we have a ways to go till we get there. I wish it would be there overnight, but you know, that's not usually how it works. Or if someone writes me a $3 million check, that'd be nice. But I digress. In terms of scalability, I think it's important to just know how much work you can actually provide to team members, because if you're overzealous, you're going to get in a trouble with, like I did, where, you know, there's one, and certainly when there's no product person. Like, I'm the product manager and the CEO and the sales guy, and I'm wearing all these hats, and I hired developers and I provided them very long leashes, right? I was and that's probably my fault as a leader. I provided them, like, I don't really care how it gets done, I just want it done. This was basically what I did. And I thought, because, you know, I have experience, or not direct experience, but I've seen other people be micromanaged and those who micromanage them, and that doesn't work, right? And I think I overcompensated for that by giving them absolutely kind of like free rein to get it done however they saw fit. And that ended up, that's what turned what should have been, or at least what I ideally believed would have been, a 3-month process into an 8-month process that was only half-baked.
Well, as you step out on the balcony and you look across what you've built, what are you most proud of?
The fact that we have been able to assist small businesses launch, grow, and scale their lists who would have otherwise been unable to. Our price point, the fact that we are self-hosted, and the fact that you own the data has enabled many more businesses that would have otherwise been unable to have any software, leverage CRM and marketing automation to grow their businesses. This is specifically true in European countries where GDPR came in and basically stopped anyone from using American-based CRM and marketing automation companies that didn't have servers out in Europe. And if they did, they were expensive. We're talking 150 plus a month. A license for Groundhog is at most $40 a month paid annually. And so many businesses have been incredibly grateful to me personally for even making this, regardless of how it looks, so that they can use it to grow their business. And I think that's probably one of the things that I'm most proud of, is just the fact that, you know, the only reason that we built this product in the first place was so that we could help people. And that's kind of just where I've always come from. It's like, as long as the product can help people, we're doing our job, right? Not doing it. We're not here to be a billionaire, although that'd be nice. You know, I'm not, you know, as long as we can help people, we're doing our jobs right. So that's what I'd say I'm most proud of.
Well, let's flip the script a little bit then. So tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
Well, I think the biggest mistake to date was investing as much as I did in the 3.0 process. And that was I guess it's only a mistake if you make it twice, but it was certainly a painful learning experience. If I would go back, I would change what I would have done. And I would have done it the good old fashioned way with the tools that we have access to and the things that we know. And as long as it's, again, like as long as it's 95% of the way there, then nobody, certainly the end user is not going to know the bloody difference. Right? They're never going to know. So like, why bother? And it's just, I bought into the hype. Right? There's a lot of hype for React. Because of at the time, like, you know, Gutenberg for WordPress, the WordPress editor was getting a lot of hype and a lot of limelight. And I'm like, well, if we build like React stuff, then, you know, we'll be hype. Doesn't work like that.
Well, what does the future look like for the product and for your team? I know you're working on some stuff. You've gone back to what you know, to your roots of building the product. What does the future look like?
We have gone back to our roots, but the roots have developed for sure. So we have we're using the technologies that we're familiar with, but we've developed brand new patterns for working with them, and major efficiencies. So it's basically like, you know, if you're using the UI, it's basically like you would be using something built with React, but it's not. And we've developed ways to get it to 95% of the way there that no one would ever know the difference. And that's enabled us to build what my original vision had been in 3 months from when we pivoted 3 months ago to doing it this way. And release is imminent. We just released Groundhog 2.5, which we kind of released some of the stuff that we were working on early. One of the big things was search filters. Now, I had made a big deal earlier about how the data is there, but it's impossible to access for like reporting purposes, right? And the same could have been true, and it's a little bit hypocritical to me, because the same was true, is like the data was there to search, to like pull up specific context. Like if you want to find everybody on your list who purchased a product in the last 60 days, right? The information was there. You could see it in the report, but you couldn't actually see the list of people. You couldn't see their names. You couldn't see their email addresses. So one of the big focuses was making that possible and making that data accessible. And we built this incredible search filters function where it can basically allow you to create, you know, person bought X product within the last 60 days and they have, you know, tag new customer and they were created in the last 90 days or they were, you know, or their contact owner is whoever or their last opened email was email A and they opened and they clicked this link in that email and they can design these incredibly like flexible search filters to find really specific people on their list so that they can market to those people and take actionable steps on that data. One of the big kind of communities that we've been resonating with recently has been nonprofits because of our recent integration with GiveWP, which is the leading donations plugin for WordPress. And how powerful would it be if, let's say, you're a nonprofit and you have like a deadline to raise $10,000, but you've only raised $8,000, right? So you need to go find $2,000 by EOD. Where do you find that? You go to your CRM and you search for your top 10 donors, right? It's like, you search for donation amount above $10,000 or above $6,000 or however much they've donated within the last 30 days. And you search that query and then you pick up the phone and you start hammering the phones on those specific people. You send them an email, you send them follow-ups, right? So that, because the people who are most likely to donate are the people who've already donated, right? And certainly your top donors. And that's what you can do now with like that search filters feature. So not only do we make our own data accessible, data within the CRM, we make the data of other plugins accessible, which a lot of them don't. You know, they're great plugins, but CRM and that kind of thinking about actioning on that data is just not what they do, right? They're focused on like membership, or they're focused on donations, or they're focused on things. They're not focused on making data actionable from a marketing standpoint, which is our job. So we make the data in everybody else's platform accessible. And that's kind of the road that we're going down. So not only just making the platform beautiful, and making it a lot more user-friendly and a lot more accessible to people who are not developers or agencies, but kind of just like your Joe Blow average business owner, but making the data of everybody else's platform accessible where it just wasn't before.
Let's switch to you, Adrian. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person that you look up to and why.
I'm a self-taught guy. Right. Like I learned to code through YouTube videos and through Stack Overflow. I went to university for computer science and I don't think I learned Big O notation, which I suppose is helpful, actually. You know, we're designing our event queue and like, all right, well, this would run in O2, but this would run in ON+1. Right. So let's do it this way. But in terms of influences, I mean, I'm a developer, but I am also a marketer, and I feel like I receive more influence on that half of kind of like my job description versus being a developer. I have what I like to believe is a unique development style. All of the frameworks, all of the libraries, all of the code patterns maybe are borrowed from other people, whether consciously or subconsciously, but certainly a lot of them I've developed just over time on my own, and they've worked very, very well. But in terms of the marketing side of things, my dad, for one, he's a digital marketing agency. He knows a lot about it. And, you know, he worked with people like Joe Vitale and kind of like the old boys club of early digital marketing from like 2008, 2009, and certainly got a lot of my marketing skills from there. Russell Brunson, ClickFunnels is okay software, but he is a next level brilliant marketer. Grant Cardone, Joe Vitale, like I mentioned, and certainly also borrowing concepts from other business owners within kind of like the WordPress plugin community, like Vito Peleg, who's a friend of mine, Chris Badgett. Oh my God, I leaned on Chris Badgett as a business owner, kind of like for business influence of how to run a WordPress plugin company. I leaned a lot on him. Chris Lemma. I went to Chris Lemma's event, CaboPress, and I met pretty much like WordPress top brass there. I remember, so back in year one, for everything in Groundhog, for kind of like the full all access suite, we were charging $200 a month, $200 a year, not $200 a month. So like a little bit under $20 a month, right? And nobody was buying it. Nobody. Like I mentioned, we had maybe 100 to 500 people for the entirety of the first year, which, you know, I want to make money. That was not how to do it. I was invited to this event through Chris Badgett, the CEO of Lift LMS. And I went and I brought my problem. There's bring your problems, leave with solutions. So I brought kind of my laundry list of here's all the things that aren't working, mostly just to do with marketing and sales. I'm like, hey, listen, I have this pricing model. We are the most affordable CRM marketing automation solution for small businesses on the market. Why is nobody buying it? And I basically posed the question to every single person at the event. There might have been 60 people there. All of them very successful WordPress plugin business owners, certainly much more successful than myself, or else they probably wouldn't be there. And every one of them said the exact same thing to me. It's like, it's not expensive enough. It's like, but don't people want it to be inexpensive? They're like, well, that's what most people think, but you'd be surprised. Double the price, watch sales go up. And I asked everyone, they all said exactly the same thing. So I came back and the next day I literally doubled the price across the board for everything. And then I removed stuff from our free version. We have a freemium version as well. That's available on the WordPress.org repository. And we took a whole bunch of features out. We made them premium. And then we took a whole bunch of features out of the $200 plan and we moved it up to a $400 plan and literally just changed the whole model overnight, and literally the next month we doubled. So in terms of like business influence, certainly so a lot of the WordPress professionals that I mentioned, but from a developer standpoint, I can't really name anybody.
Well, last question, Adrian. So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world. Can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
I've been giving a lot of advice recently. I've been giving to people within the WordPress plugin ecosystem with similar products to mine. And, you know, there's enough room for everybody. It's a big enough pond. There's WordPress is predicted to be 50% of the all websites on the internet within the next few years. So it's a big enough pond, right? And I meet people and I get on call. I'm like, hey, listen, you know, what's your struggle? And 9 times out of 10, it's like, well, nobody's buying it. It's like, well, how do I get sales? How do I market? How do I, a business is only a business if you're selling stuff. Otherwise, it's a hobby. Right. And there's a lot of VC companies out there financing really expensive hobbies. Right. So. And I usually say, the same thing to a lot of them. It's like, well, who's your audience? Right. You got to know what you're selling to. You got to know what their needs are. Most 9 times out of 10, they have no idea. Is it an agency? Is it a small business owner? Is it a mom? Is it a father? Is it a son? Is it a student? Is it a course instructor? Is it a creator? Who is the person? And once you've identified the person, the way that I built my audience, and this goes into how I kind of marketed for year one, how I built my own audience was through other people. So I identified, well, who's my audience? Agencies. Digital marketing agencies, they're the one who knows how to do the product best. They're the one who knows how to get results. They're the one who can read the reports and analyze that to make good marketing decisions. Small businesses can do that to a degree, but that's not they're busy doing other stuff, right? So let's just get on agencies. So what do? I contact a bunch of podcasts that run podcasts about agencies or for agencies or their agencies themselves. And I basically just do this circuit. I email them. I get 10% people respond back to me and I get on a call. And I build my audience basically by leveraging theirs. And over time that builds up my own audience. And then I can leverage that audience. And then I kind of pass the buck forward. And guess what? Other people come in, they speak with me and they leverage my audience. Right. And that's kind of like probably the number one, because so many developers, you know, they have great ideas, but we're often way too involved in our own products to see sort of like the big marketing picture. You know, we think that everyone would be able to get value out of this. And I truly believe that there's tons of small businesses who get value out of Groundhog, but marketing to everyone is like marketing to no one. You got to pick your battles. You got to pick your ideal customer. Like, you look at ConvertKit, look at Drip, look at, you know, if you look at those two, it's like e-commerce or creators, not both, right? Their marketing is very specific to those audience because those are the audiences that they can access easily through their networks. And picking that from day one is going to make it significantly easier to get a business off the ground.
That's great advice. Well, Adrian, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Groundhog.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Laphart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. Support the show on patreon.com/codestory for just $5 to $10 a month. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.